Okay, today is October 10th, 2000. I'm in the office of Yue Zhang, and this is the third tape, side one. I had a few follow-up questions from the last interview that we had. How did your mother and father meet? Do you know?
Oh, they don't meet. They were married by the arrangement of family.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty typical. I think they probably met. I remember they said they actually met before they actually married. But the met is in a different sense from what we say met here.
Right.
When we say met here, they get to know each other, they communicate each other, then they fall in love with each other. So that's not what happened to them. So they were pretty much arranged by the family, even though they actually had a chance and then saw each other.
Mm-hmm.
So met probably is more accurate to be described as saw each other.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a little bit better than most other people at the time that they never see each other.
Right.
Yeah. Before they get married. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they had any kind of communication before they get married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was there a marriage broker involved, or how did that? I mean, who arranged that?
Our family.
Family. Did.
Family.
Okay.
And I don't know how they know each other because they were not far away. There's only my father's family and then my mother's family is only was only. 15 kilometers away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they kind of know each other.
Yeah. Okay. And when did they marry again? Was that just before the end of the Civil War?
Just in the middle of it.
Oh, the middle.
Yeah. I think it's 47, 48.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. In the interview yesterday, you said that your mother said that you were a wild boy. "Quote unquote."
Uh-huh.
What did she mean by that, or what did you take her to mean by that?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to describe that. Yeah, for one thing, and I never really started when I was little,
mm-hmm.
and I told you yesterday was the home was so easy, so I never really needed to start much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another thing is, when I was little, they both have to go out to work. There was no daycare available after they moved back together in 1963 or early 64. So there's no one at home to take care of me. And my grandma died early on when I was 2 years old. So all they can do is just lock me and at home.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're out, and by the time they come back, in 1 second, and my mother would say, as soon as I opened the door, I was disappeared.
Right.
Yeah. And before that, my mother always said that when she was raising me alone before we reunited with my father, a boy, and that we never got a chance to run away from the classroom, and it's so difficult to find me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always trying to be the first one in the class, but as soon as the class finished, was daycare, it's not really class, and it's just difficult to find me back.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why I had some pretty good memory when I for my boyhood, and very playful.
Right.
So there was not much homework, not like days, and not even mentioned the homework was so easy.
Right.
So I always just try to play around.
Mm-hmm. But I know that sometimes mothers today have pagers on their children so that they can find out where they are. Maybe that's
no. My mother always had difficulty finding me back, and she said the one thing she remembered is that there was a river outside where we live,
mm-hmm.
and outside the fence, and then. She said, I love to go there. And then by the time she found me back, very often there was nothing on me. So the clothes is lost, and it's pretty much a naked boy. And
right.
And they couldn't find my clothes back.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. At one point, I think in between 1958 and 62, when your father is gone.
Right.
You said that your mother suffered nutritional deficiency for about 3 years because
right.
she was feeding you and there was rationing. It was just a difficult time in general for China. Was there any long-term impact on your mom physically or mentally?
Yeah, it had. She developed this disease, and I don't know what's called in English, but it's just got whole leg swollen.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a term for that. I lost one time. I couldn't find it. I
right.
can't remember now. For that, there was a story for that, actually. Because she actually developed this actual disease, mm-hmm. not just because starving. And she was given extra allowance for the beans, the yellow beans.
Right.
And that was actually considered at the time as extra food. Not everybody could have it. So I like it. I like, my mother said, one time I went to her and say, "Mom, look, and I got a swollen too, because I want those beans."
Right. Okay. And just to sort of complete your father's career and your mother's career as well, you're at one point you said 1979, I think, that there was the possibility held out of your father teaching, perhaps, but that his knowledge was sort of outdated by that point.
Right.
And he decided not to. Did he remain then a farmer?
No. So the, I think it was 1979 or 80, and I was already in the college. Mm-hmm. And so finally, they... what are they called? There's a specific term in Chinese to the people they wrongly treated before. Mm-hmm. Now they try to clear them. I think that's the word, clearance. They said, right. Well, and we will wrongly accuse you. And so they didn't really say apologize. They just say, well, you were wrongly treated, and so now you are back to normal, just like everyone else.
Right.
So they restored his salary. I don't know if they ever actually they compensate for what he has lost over the previous, what, from 58 to 20 years.
Yeah.
I don't think they really compensate what he has lost in that 20 years. But I don't remember, they give him something like $600 Chinese yuan. Mm. That's about it. Mm. And I don't know how that 600 Chinese yuan was calculated. But actually it was pretty big deal at the time and for him, and because it just failed. Let him to feel that he's been somewhat compensated,
right.
Even though that was by no means a complete compensation.
Now, is that a large amount or a small amount?
At the time, 600 yuan was a relatively large amount, equivalent of about 1 year of his salary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's about right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but of course, that was not even close to what he has lost in the previous 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but when he was stripped his job and. Not only he lost his job, his position, he also lost all his salary income. And so that was never really repaid back. Right? But even that small amount of money and it just make him feel somewhat compensated. On top of that, the university, the Jiangxi Agriculture University, where we associate with,
mm-hmm.
Asked him that and, so we now will want to restore your job as well. And before he was stripped his job, he was actually was not faculty. At the university, he was working in the capital town, a capital city of Jiangxi Province, Nanchang, to manage the forest development. So, it was not education or academic job. It was a technical management job. So now, because he moved, and they asked him to go back to teach, and he thought about this, and then he said, "Well, there's no point for me to go back to teaching after 20 years, and I couldn't remember anything. I was not doing anything on my." Expertise, what I learned in the college, can't remember anything. I have not read a single page of my book all these years. So he didn't take the offer.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, he was remaining doing his technical job for designing garden or development of land, landscape. That's what it was, right.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. And he did that until he retired, I take it.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Now, is your father still alive?
Yeah, he's here actually.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, he came here and accompanied my mother for her heart surgery a few months ago.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah.
Okay, then let's finish out your mom's career too.
Yeah.
I mean, she started out, or at least at one point, she was an accountant.
Right.
Right. And then there was the upheaval of the Cultural Revolution. She was on a farm for a time.
Yeah,
right?
Very hard labor.
Right.
So my mother actually had only two careers, account and the real farmer. Okay? And for the real farmer, that was 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so really working in the countryside. And that was actually a very difficult time. Not mentally, but actually physically as well. And she was short, and physically was not very strong. She had not been involved in any hard labor work until that point, and she spent the previous in the office doing the accounting work. So all of a sudden, she was sent to countryside doing the field work with everyone else. It's pretty tough on her. Mm. It's very tough on her. Not only the physical part is tough, but also there was a specific disease in that area. And I don't know, there's no such disease in the United States. And I think in the Asia, but the one time was pretty bad. And right now, if not completely eliminated, and it being shrinked to very small areas, is a small infectious agent that can infect you and infect your liver.
Mm-hmm.
And to enlarge your liver, and eventually, if you repeatedly infect it, could ultimately lead to the liver cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was pretty bad at the time, and the government eventually paid a very attention. And so if you're diagnosed with that disease, mm-hmm. infection, so you have to undergo treatment. The treatment is very harsh. And it gets you throw up and diarrhea and the loss of weight and the loss of appetite and for a couple of months. Yeah, so very hot, very harsh treatment.
Right.
So she was infected twice. My father was infected three times. Yeah, so that was pretty specific in that area,
right.
Along the lake. Yeah. When I finished, I tried to find the name of that. It's not virus, I don't, it's not mosquito either. And it's I think it's a type of insect.
Right.
Yeah. I found that name for you.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. When she leaves the farm, though, what does she do? Where does she go?
I think it was 72 or 71 after Lin Biao died. And remember, Lin Biao escaped or fled.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, the country and the whole country come down somewhat. So that was the time and I was going to the high school. And that was the time when Deng Xiaoping came back. To power, and the second time, try to restore the normalcy of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Said, well, the worker go back to factory to do your job, the farmer go back to farm, and student go back to classroom. And so that's the time my mother was asked to go back to her accounting job. Yeah.
Okay.
So that and returned somewhat normalcy. Yeah. That was 70, I think most likely 71 or 72.
Okay. And she did that right up until she retired?
Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, do your mother and father live here?
Right now?
Yeah.
No, they still live in the Lanchang, where they, since then, they retired about, 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Probably longer than that. But and they have been pretty frequently in the with us. And this is their fourth visit to us in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to talk with them at some point in their impression of the United States. We'll get to your impression as well, but that's always interesting.
It changed quite a bit, but still you can see the difference and the impression I have versus what impression they have.
Yeah.
And so one is the way they are count at this world is much less than the way we have been. They can't drive, they can't read English.
Mm-hmm.
So what they know about the United States, even though they live here for four times, a lot from what we've been telling them, and from reading some Chinese version of U.S. papers,
right.
Not through direct contacting with the American people or community like that.
Yeah.
And the other reason is culturally, and the ideologically quite different,
mm-hmm.
and they just subconsciously refuse to take some American culture,
mm-hmm.
and they. They don't say we're doing wrong, but they just simply cannot accept.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, especially come to kids' education, yeah.
Yeah.
They don't like it. They really think we are too spoiled our daughter.
Right. Okay. All right, well, let's pick up then where we left off yesterday. And let me summarize that. You had taken a test to enter college. You were denied entrance, probably again because of the problems that your father had. The government, and then you wrote a letter to Deng Xiaoping,
mm-hmm.
which was actually maybe not personally received by him, but it definitely had an impact because then a person from the government had come to your province and
right.
said, you know, let's look at his record, blah blah blah,
yeah.
Told you that you were not alone, that there were other people as well.
Right.
Go ahead and pick it up there if you would.
Okay, that was a very upset time. Finally, you saw this, the hope. Mentioned during that 4 years in the countryside between my high school and my college, and the physical labor was not the most difficult part. The most difficult part being the one you don't feel any hope for your life. You're young, you still want to learn, yeah, but it's hungry for the knowledge. But you can't find any book to read, and on top, the worst part is you just don't know where you're going in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I clearly remember those feelings, and I just feel I will be like every other young man and woman like me being sent to countryside. And I was the youngest one in my whole class, so I just saw them and what happened to them ahead of me. And then after 2 or 3 years, I just don't know what to do. You can't get any good job outside the field, and you can't go to any college, you can't get any further education. So you find a girl, find a boy, get married, and have a kid, and that's about it. So this, the farm life will be your whole life. And so that's the hopeless feeling, is the most difficult one. So after 77 and 78, and all of a sudden, and you feel that, the whole new world is come in front of you, and you are actually allowed to apply to college, and you could have a chance to have a test. And then that's what at least the government told us, that what the newspaper says.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I did pretty well in the first test in 77, and you just feel, God, the whole new world is coming, and just all of a sudden, overnight, the dream is being shattered again. Mm-hmm. Then, well, sorry, you still cannot go because of your father. That's something you cannot change it. So that was a very, very down time for me and for my family. And that was very spontaneously. I wrote a letter to Deng Xiaoping, and he was a real leader at the time and for the country. And we all know that he is behind this whole reform. The country tried to get back and the so-called full modernizations.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really the one behind all this. I wrote to him very spontaneously. I don't remember I told anybody or mentioned anybody or told anybody afterwards. And I was actually surprised that the letter was actually received. And I didn't really expect that the letter would have any impact. And I was very, just feel so upset, not hoping that something could happen or the letter could solve something or to help me something. So that's the situation I remembered. So surprisingly, the letter was actually received. And a few months later, there was a meeting in Beijing, his conference, and discussing how the country should reform its education. And all the major universities sent their representative to Beijing, including the president from Jiangxi Agricultural University, where we lived. And the president of the Jiangxi Agricultural University is actually a longtime friend of my mother and my father, because they know each other very long,
mm-hmm.
through the bad time and the okay time previously. And because during the Cultural Revolution, he himself was beaten down as well, just like my father and my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So they know each other for a very long time. So he went there for a meeting, and he was very surprised being called up and by Deng Xiaoping's office. He said, well, and is the president of Jiangxi Agricultural University here? He said, yeah, I'm here. What's up? He said, well, and is this a young man in your university called Yue Sheng? He said, yeah, I know him. He said he wrote a letter to our office. He was really surprised by that. He didn't know what I was wrote. Right. And he said, well, and we please tell him we got his letter, and I don't think we're going to reply to him individually, because we got many letters like that, and tell him that his case is not alone.
Mm-hmm.
So we needed to set an implemented policy to dealing with a situation like this and around the country, and instead of dealing case by case. And tell him that the policy will be implemented, that admission to the university will be solely depending on the merit, your testing score, mm-hmm. not by your association with your family. And even though they said that beforehand in the first test, but the policy was never really implemented and locally. He said they were going to really force an implementation of this policy, and we can do a better job in the second year, and tell him to prepare for the second test.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very huge encouragement on me. And so you feel that for the first time that your complaint can be heard by someone on the top. And you can see the whole country is moving forward.
Right.
And that they have a lot of this discussion on the newspaper. They did actually publish someone else's letter, not my letter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very similar situation. There was someone else from another province, and the kids had a very good testing, and but couldn't go to school for the same reason,
mm-hmm.
because of his father or his mother was still labeled as a bad person or enemy of a people. So they used that as an example, and said the policy will be implemented this year solely based on the merit of the applicant, not by the family.
Mm-hmm.
And in parallel, they tried to apologize to a lot of people that were wrongly accused for all the years, but that is the accumulation of 20 years of political movement. So that takes time. And so my father was not cleared after, 2 years after I was into the university, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see, you can feel that the whole country is moving forward. And so I was able to get, like, I think about 2 months of leave of absence to study full time to prepare the 78th exam. And I did pretty well. And I was second in terms of score in the whole area. I don't know how many applicants participate in that test. It's just as big as the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And the number we heard for the first year was like 10 million people participate.
Wow.
And less than 1 million people was admitted. So the chance was, no, less than that. It's just above 100,000 because the ratio was just about 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be accepted by the university. And the second year was even more because people feel, wow, this is real, this is not a joke, and that you can just participate in the test, you'll be doing well, you could go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did pretty well in the second year, and got in. That was a huge deal for me. It's almost impossible to overstate and how big the impact it had on me and for my family, as well as for the whole farm.
Right.
Because the whole farm is about more than 1,000 people working in the farm. Okay. And they couldn't believe that the one actually can go to college just by having tests, not by the recommendation from somebody who never even received a high school education.
Right.
That's what I've been doing in the previous 10 years. Yeah. So that had a lot of impact. And that was the only one got in that year.
You set a precedent. You know, other people in the province look up and say, well, you know, you got through. So.
It's probably more of a political signal to the people say that things are really changing. You can read from the newspaper, you can hear from the radio, but this is the actual president we know for years, and he actually come from this such a bad family, and his father is anti-revolutionary, his mother came from this the bad family because my mother family is also had a piece of property before 1949, and so this is by any definition is a bad family.
Mm-hmm.
And is enemy of the people of the country or government. And yet, he was able to go to university, one of the best in the country, just because he had a good score of the test. So that was a pretty shock to many people. And they really scratched their head. They couldn't believe this. And then my mother told me the story. I didn't hear this myself. And they said there was another family. And it's actually a friend of us. And it's a very, very poor family before 1949. So by that definition, and he is a good person. The family and the revolutionary family, because they were really poor, so he was the poorest one, and on the whole farm, okay, and this, which means he had the best in the family history, according to the standard by Communist Party,
right,
and he was really confused. He said, "Why, yet you go to university, not my daughter?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was genuinely confused. Why would that, how would that happen? Because that was just totally different from what he has been told all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so you eventually ended up though at Fudan University, right? And the first couple of years, you take basic requirement courses, really, and it was very intense, right?
Very intense. For the actually, pretty much whole 3 years, except the last semester we were doing the graduate thesis, did some experiment. For the first 3 years, if not 3.5 years, it was very, very intense. Every semester we were taking a lot of classes, and not only because in the traditional Chinese education is try to fit the student as much as possible. They're still doing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's different from here. But also that the system of education is different from here, in that a student didn't have a whole lot of choices, and they just take whatever is being given to you.
Mm-hmm.
And here, a lot of the classes was chosen by student. You have a curriculum, you have a requirement, and as a core. But on top of that, that's not enough for your credit, and then you have to choose some classes yourself. But in China, pretty much you are given what you're supposed to be learning.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that's different is, and the student was accepting the college and in a major already. And here you decide after getting into university, you are accepted by the university, not by a specific department. That was different in China. So you are accepted by a specific department in a specific university. So I know I was going to study biology even before I go to the college.
I did?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I was accepted by Fudan University biology department. Even though I didn't know anything about biology at the time.
That's interesting.
Because at that time, the high school was the biology was never taught in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, is that because you scored well, too, on the biology part of this exam, or was
no,
it simply...
No, because there was, the biology was not part of a test.
Right.
Okay. So the test consisted of six subjects: Chinese, politics, mathematics, physics, chemistry, English. Hmm. So biology was not part of it.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you get on to Fudan University. Talk a little bit about those years. What were they like?
If you ask me now, what's a single word, a single sentence describe those 4 years, it's hard to study.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very hard to study. It's because we actually go in, when in the university, and we say deficit from high school. I mentioned that in the 6 years of my middle school and high school years, I only had 3 good semesters. And then the rest of the time was pretty much just walking, and never really sitting in the class and learning anything. So we have 2 things to finish. One, to finish what we're missing from the high school, and the other, and to catch up the college classes. But good thing is that we were so hungry, we were working so hard, studying so hard, and all those faculties are so willing to teach. They feel so happy about it. And they know us for years. There's such a class of students, they are so hungry to learn, they really want to learn. They're such a positive group of students, and so they must have such good positive feeling as we did, because well, obviously, I mean, we feel so positive, so ecstatic, and so happy, and just because being able to go to college, and they are so happy to feel be able to, and again, and able to teach. Someone really want to learn it, and I mentioned yesterday that for the. During the 10 years of a cultural revolution, the whole system was upside down in that, and in a few years when the college was reopened, it's the faculty teaching students, but then the student managed the university. Because the student was recommended by the workers and the president, and they come into university not only for learning, actually not many for learning, it's actually to reform the university, to manage the university. It's just something you just never can imagine it. And so the teacher got very confused. They don't know they are listening to student or the teacher student. So it's a very upside down relationship. Yeah. So all of a sudden now the whole thing get back to normal. So they must feel so happy as well, just like we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So sort of euphoria in a way on both sides.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it was very intense. And looking back, it was incredibly how much we were able to learn in that 4 years. Not only we learned what we missed. In the high school years, and so we have to start from scratch, really from actually below the scratch, and from the what we're missing for the mathematics, for the basic chemistry and the basic physics, because they have to teach us back to make sure we all come to the standard before teaching us what's supposed to be learning in the college. Yeah, so we got extra load of curriculum to learn, and we did it. So that's the one thing, and to describe those 4 years. And this one thing, I don't know how specific I can describe how much I benefit from it. But subconsciously, I do know that, and I personally benefit a lot, and different from my classmates, is that, and I have this habit to learn something outside the classroom always. Yeah, the interest is my interest is always. Obviously broader than my classmates, and they sometimes got me into trouble because I didn't spend enough time on my textbook or my courses. So I was never doing outstanding or excellent in my class for all the tests in those 4 years.
Right.
If my class has about between 30 or 33 students depending each year, so we have a lot of tests every year, middle term and the final. So the score are open to everybody. So we all know and everybody score. I hardly score on the top in those 4 years. Occasionally, I was top, and I think we had about 20 or 25 courses. I probably did pretty well on a few ones I like genetics and math, and I don't know what else. And probably no more than 5 courses I did on top of 5. But for the most courses, I was average, and I was ranking in the class of 30 some people, and I was ranked consistently like number 10, 11, 12, along those lines.
Because of this broad curiosity you sort of brought, you were doing
that's part of the reason. I was really studying hard enough as my classmates into the textbook. And I like it, I started. But I always try to find some time, and I always want to find some time to read something else I can grab. And at the time, actually, I was thinking whether I was doing the right things. Because no one knows how important that would be. It was not very emphasized back then that you learn broadly. Instead, the traditionally, the Chinese education emphasized on the textbook education. So you learn what you're given, and you try to memorize your textbook, and you are not really encouraged to learn broadly, to think about yourself. So I think that's the one consistent deficit of Chinese traditional education.
Right.
I think a lot of people realize it now, and they try to change it. But still, it's difficult to change it, because even from the high school, from elementary school, students just learn very narrowly. And what they learned, and they carry so much homework and directly derived from their textbook. They had little time to study and outside the textbook.
Right.
And all the way from elementary school to high school to college. I think still, to a large extent, is still the case by now. And so they train a student, and a lot of smart students, but have very narrow vision. So that's one thing they're not doing good. But on the subject, they know really, really well. And they know so much, so deep, just not broad enough. So I was a little bit different, and well, actually quite obviously different from a lot of my classmates in that standard. And so almost getting me into trouble for not being outstanding, because at the end of your graduation, what kind of job you are getting, what you can get at graduate school, a lot to do with your and the GPA. And the accumulation of the 4 years, and my GPA, if the GPA was critically important factor, my GPA was not outstanding from college. Yeah, because what, no matter how much you learned, how much you read outside the textbook, there's no way you can be tested, and it would not be counted, or no way to count anyway,
It doesn't fulfill any of the four modernizations, if you learn about,
Say. And so it's only for my, primarily for my own interest, and subconsciously, and the more you read, the more you realize, and the good scientists, they do emphasize that and you need a broader knowledge and to making discoveries. But that's something you cannot teach in the classroom. And the fact they don't emphasize those ones. But somehow it just make me feel that that is the right thing to do, ultimately. But how so, and the reality, I don't know.
So did you have any teachers or mentors that stood out at this time when you're at Fudan?
Not the first couple of years. Because I don't remember anybody my first couple of years, because the way that they taught in the university is somewhat different from here, is in the Department of Mathematics. But it's not my department somehow, because I was supposed to be in the biology department. But the Department of Mathematics, they provide the math education for the whole university. So they have this whole section of faculty that just doing this basic mathematics education for the first year college student. So after that, we never get to see them. We never get to see those faculties. And I do remember that my the math professor was a woman, and did pretty well, but was not very, she was a very good professor teaching and explaining it very clearly, but I don't have an impression that her teaching was very inspiring. It's very formula dependent in the sense that, and they're just teaching exactly what textbook says, and very clear. It's very competent that she can explain very clear, but never beyond that. So I was never inspired anything by that. And the same thing applied to my early chemistry teaching. And we learned a lot of good chemistry, like quantum chemistry and physical chemistry. But I don't remember clearly it was anybody particularly inspiring. Yeah, it's very basic, and it's very solid. Very solid. Solid is word to describe it. Yeah. But I don't remember, and any of those my early physics, chemistry, and the math professor, and would inspire me to research around the direct dual teaching, which I would assume was what professor is supposed to do, inspire your student and get them into interested. That didn't happen to me in the first 2 years. But in my third year, and that happened. I actually remember very clearly, I had a lot of impact on me under my biochemistry class.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so biochemistry was taught by a faculty, and her, the last name was Shen, S-H-E-N. She and her husband were both educated at Columbia early on.
Wow.
Yeah, and they must have had a tough time doing the calculation as well, because they were so, felt so happy to go back to the podium to teaching students.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time was not even textbook available. So they have to write a textbook, they have to incorporate what they just read, and they just try to remember and what they've been taught years ago. And so that was as contemporary as possible, okay? And so evolving class, boy, she was great.
Mm-hmm.
She was great. And I remember a lot of details and she taught us. And it was a big class. And we had a class together with 77 class, because just combined the two together, it was a bigger class.
Mm-hmm.
And she had several TAs, and just to make it even more extraordinary, because TA was not a common practice back then in China. The TA is not like here, that here the TA job was carried by grad student. The TA was carried by actual faculties,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's junior faculties.
Mm-hmm.
So you just feel, wow, this must be pretty serious, because those junior faculties, we call them faculty, we call them professors now, they are just sitting in the same classroom just like us, learning this. So that just make you feel even more serious about this class. And that was a pretty heavy class.
Yeah.
I remember for that whole semester, whenever the biochemistry class was 3 times a week, when it started, and it's filled and condensed an hour, and very, it's very dense, the class. Starting from basic biochemistry all the way to modern molecular genetics, and the which taught is chronically and very inspiring in one specific way, that is, and she would describe in the original experiment, right? And she would pause, and after describing the original experiment, and she would ask him, and what interpretation could be for this experiment,
mm-hmm.
and what was the question before the experiment was designed. And she was very good a teacher, very organized. The content was the best ever, because that was describing the golden stage of modern molecular biology.
Right.
And we're talking about from the establishment of the law of genetics from early days of T.H. Morgan, and then starting more and more concentrated on the molecular biology between 1940s to 1960s. That was a period during which the DNA was discovered as a genetic material, and then double helix structure was elucidated,
mm-hmm.
and then the lot experimental approach was taken to demonstrate a semi-conservative DNA replication and to the elucidation of a genetic code. And
mm-hmm.
that was the best time for the biology, and together with the best teacher I ever had, I just feel fascinated.
Mm-hmm. So she saw not only basic concepts and language, the terminology, but also the history.
Right.
Which you don't always get even today.
No, you don't. And that was a very, very good way to teach. And
right.
So that gave us very clear how the molecular biology was developed. And it had a lot of impact on me. And I remember I was not long ago, last summer, when I was on the beach vacation, I was reading this book, The Eighth Day of Creation.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, gosh, I remember this. And in 1980s, when I was in the college,
mm-hmm.
that was amazing, and actually I learned those early stories.
Yeah,
yeah. And I always try to think about actually do the same thing to the student here, and I never get a chance, because I'm not involved in teaching any undergraduate here. I was only teaching the graduate classes, so I never get a chance to really give me enough time to teach in the class on the basic level to tell students how the molecular biology was developed, because it's a very good science. And the people argue, I think, very reasonable argument, that and only another discipline of science that has a comparable golden age as molecular biology during early 50s or late 40s is the quantum physics,
right.
in the early on of this century.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, and it's just one major discovery followed by another, and it just totally revolutionized how the biology was started. And together with the fact that the Dr. Shen was such a terrific faculty and
mm-hmm.
the teacher, and I think I was not alone being inspired by that,
right.
and we were so ecstatic and realized, wow, this is a biology.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a time, and it's such a sharp contrast that we were learning anatomy of animals, anatomy of the plant. I mean, you can't be more confident than that, mm-hmm. because you're learning all this anatomy of the plant and the animals. That's so, and I think boring is not exaggeration.
Right.
I can't take those ones. I mean, I was amazed that some of my classmates was able to interest in and remember those, the terms, and I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I tried hard, I just couldn't. And right. I was joking, I said, how could you possibly remember this? And this is just memorized. This is, there's no thinking involved. They just memorize. And this particular plant is in the same family or genus with this one, and so on and so forth. I say, what's the, it's completely descriptive.
Right.
I said, there's no thinking behind this. And it's only a little bit since evolution. But that's only take like a couple lectures. But all the rest, the whole semester, is descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
The shape of the leaf, the height of the tree, and the distribution and of this particular species. I mean, that's, you can't remember this much. And so it's totally and express your interest in the biology, if that's what I would be learning in the rest of 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so fortunately, we start learning the biochemistry and the molecular biology. It was not even called the molecular biology, actually.
Right.
Yeah. And we had a couple of lectures, and by another and the faculty and Dr. Tan. He had a big impact how the department ran the classes. Even though he only taught us for a few lectures, and he was a student of T.H. Morgan.
Wow.
Yeah, and he actually had a class in early on in Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
So this Dr. Shen and actually was his student, and after taking his class, and he sent both couple to Columbia. And he's alumni. So traditionally, Fudan University was the best during those years. I don't know what's now in terms of molecular biology and molecular genetics education in mm-hmm. the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
It got so strong. And for those people that actually remember this early argument between the molecular genetics and represented by and the T.H. Morgan of the United States versus and the Michelin and of the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
and there was big argument. Not in the academic field, but also politically in China. And there's strange things happening here, because even though the United States of America was considered enemy of the communist world or socialist world, but because China had this big argument with the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. the Mao Zedong actually got involved in this for some unknown reason. I never figured why he would be interested in genetics. He actually met with Dr. Tan for 3 times, tried to learn the genetics of by Morgan and the Hmong there, and then so that the Soviet genetics was never introduced seriously into China, and that's one of the main reasons why the molecular biology was so behind in the Soviet Union, because they really hurt, and by this pseudo science and championed by Michelin and his associate. And that hurt Soviet a lot, but that was not really brought into China, especially in the Fudan, because all those older professors, or the senior professors, and a lot were taught in the United States in the late 40s. So they were nearly, they never and taught and the Soviet genetics to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was another strange thing happening during those days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I was very fortunate then just to be at Fudan.
Right. And so Dr. Tan and he only taught us a few lectures, but his student and was the real one, and they've been teaching us the real biochemistry or molecular biology as we know now, and that was a very inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was, it's harder to over describe those experiences. And
right.
Every class we had, and it was so quiet, and the people just listened. And there's mm-hmm. more than 100 in the class, was so focused now, just listening. Yeah, and I heard that was the last. The doctor only taught 3 years, and then he stopped teaching, and then started teaching graduate school. So we were fortunately, and then as the first 3 classes of the cultural revolution, and that everybody was so eager to learn and to teach.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me turn over the tape.
Okay.